Hello, welcome back. This is Jason, Fuck You Depression, part two of our continuing discussion, my monologue about drugs and the drugs I take. So cozy up with the drugs you take, and let's dive back in. The first thing that I want to clear up is that I mentioned amphetamines and stimulants as being these performance-enhancing drugs, and in many ways they do enhance my performance as a chef, as a drummer, as a just anything that involves productivity. Like I said in the previous episode, it doesn't translate across the board to everything. One of the examples being it doesn't necessarily make me a better partner. So there's a balancing act there. But it also, I don't want to get it twisted. I don't want to make it give it this reputation like it's a limitless drug or a steroid or something that's like flawless, because those drugs don't exist. Even on the playing field, when they talk about performance-enhancing drugs for sports, does it improve the way that I work and organize myself and execute? Yes, it does. But it's not flawless. There are definitely downsides to it. One that comes to mind right away is that I can still be disorganized, just in a different way. Instead of being messy necessarily, I've just got too many things going on, which are all going on at the same time. So, you know, being more organized would be like, hey, you know, why don't you work on one thing from A to Z and then move on to the next thing. So sometimes it exacerbates my symptoms, and sometimes it channels them into something that I can use effectively. I just want to make that clear. I don't want to make it sound like this thing makes me a kick-ass chef, because it doesn't. I'm going to give myself some credit, and I got to where I am today from doing what I do, from learning on the job, from going to school for it, from surrounding myself with great chefs and great people, and even working for some asshole shitheads who still gave me valuable lessons as to what not to do and how I didn't want to lead. A portion of that I was taking medication, a large portion of that I was not. So it's not like I started medication and all of a sudden I shot into success. I'm not going to misrepresent this. Okay? It's helping me do my job a little bit better. And yes, I would like to go back and do it all over again with the medication, because of the clarity and the lens that it puts over my thought process, the filter, and that I can focus a lot better, and that I can absorb information and be a better student. But it's not magical. I mean, the first time that I actually saw drugs being, or rather medication, it was Adderall being passed out in this kitchen I was working at. And okay, one person was prescribed it for ADD at the time, and this was in the year 2000. In the year 2000! At Outback Steakhouse, and I'm going to go ahead and say that because, I don't think anybody from Outback is listening to this, and the people that I worked with at that time, we've all lost touch. But there was one gentleman there that was prescribed Adderall for ADD, and he didn't take his medication, and what he would do is he would give it to the other cooks. And so the ones that didn't need it were performing at this incredible pace and just laser focus. And because he wasn't taking it, he was very high energy, and you know, ADD and ADHD and all these different things that we're talking about, they affect people differently. So, you know, what works for one person isn't going to work for another, and the symptoms that one person has aren't going to be the same as somebody else's. So, in his case, not taking the medication paid more dividends for him. And also helped the team because everybody in that kitchen was on it except for myself. Because at that point I was like, I don't take pills of any sort. That just wasn't the drugs that I was into, illegal or otherwise. And at that point I was off medication. Then there was two other gentlemen, a guy named Kyle, and then another guy that we called Fat. Well, we didn't call him Fat. That was he asked to be that was his nickname, Fat. His name was Felton, and those two would refuse to take it. They just didn't. One of them just was kind of a square guy and didn't do anything, drugs or smoke or anything like that. And the other one, he just wasn't into it. He was like, "I can do this job. I don't need to take something." I would see that these two would tend to fall behind. And if any of them are fucking listening, they're going to be like, "Motherfucker, you were the one falling behind." And I was. I was a complete mess of a line cook back then. That was 22 years ago. And I'm just talking about what I observed. Okay, this isn't about what I was doing there. I already talked about smoking weed and deep cleaning my station in the previous episode. I'm talking about, out of this group of subjects, the ones that were on Adderall versus those who were not were drastically outperforming the control group, I guess, which would be the people not taking it. When I say you want to talk about a metric, ticket times, that location, that restaurant, we held the record for ticket times. We're talking sometimes 11, 12 minute entree ticket times when the norm at that point was between 15 and 17 minutes. And these guys were cranking out steaks. We're talking about fucking well done steaks in Florida. And they're just cranking. And I'm just sitting here paying attention to this, and it's like, there might be something to that. But because I'm a very slow learner, it took me 22 years to realize, oh shit, yeah, maybe I would have benefited from that. Maybe I would have worked cleaner and a little bit more organized and been out on time and not been such a fucking disaster. Or maybe I would have been worse, who knows. The point being is being young and just in that environment where I was exposed to it helped me make decisions on what I found acceptable and kind of figure out boundaries. Because they offered it to me and I was like, no, I don't do that. Like, that's not my name on that bottle, so I'm scared. I was scared of drugs that weren't acid and mushrooms and something you could roll up and smoke. Something else I wanted to address from the previous episode, and I've talked about this in other episodes, I think it was with Heisel, about getting back onto medication. I really want to kind of explain that a little bit more, because I roll over it a lot, saying that, I've made the decision that I needed chemical intervention. I needed more than just therapy. I needed, at that time, I needed assistance. I needed medication. And I had talked to a coworker who was diagnosed ADHD, and she gave me a lead on a psychiatrist who specialized in that, and more importantly, a large part of his practice, most of his patients were in the hospitality industry. So we could skip ahead to the shitty diet, the poor sleep, the long hours, the working holidays, the adrenaline spikes and dips, the demand of the work in general. We could I could jump in with somebody who already understood those things or could understand them quicker, rather than having to start from scratch and be like, well, what's your sleep pattern like? And it's like, well, I don't sleep for shit. And it's like, well, why are you eating? And it's like, well, I eat one meal a day and it's very quickly over a trash can. Well, maybe this is part of the problem. It's like, yeah, well, this is a problem, but this is also like 18 years of doing this. And that's me alone. This is generations of people who have been doing this. This is a matter of fact. This comes with the territory. So that's not going to change unless I change careers. So let's just get to what can help. I mean, it pretty much sounds like you're going to a drug dealer, but it was also helping with a lot of the self-deprecation and depression that was coming along with it. The mood swings were more than they ought to have been. And I mean, I was a mess. I wasn't a good person to be around, I don't feel. I mean, I had decent days. I wasn't this monster, but I certainly wasn't the best version of myself, and I wasn't entirely there. So before I could get in with this psychiatrist, I went to a nurse practitioner, general practitioner, nurse practitioner. Because I don't have a regular physician. I always think that's funny when I end up in the ER or... you know, you go to urgent care and they say, oh, well, follow up. Who's your doctor? And I was like, I don't have a doctor. I haven't had a doctor since I had a pediatrician. Like, I don't know what world everybody else is living in, but I don't work in an industry that offers insurance. And that's not at the top of my list to go seek out a doctor. You know, I go to the doctor when I have to. I've cut fingertips off and sustained second-degree burns, and that's when you go to the doctor. Other than that, you don't. Unless, of course, you are exploring getting back on medication for the sake of your mental health, like I was doing years ago. And this is the part that I leave out about the story, is they had said... okay, well, we're going to put you... I explained to what was going on with me, and, you know, I was driving to work, and, you know, I wanted to drive my car off the road, and I was just thinking very bad things, and it wasn't getting better, it was getting worse, and I was shutting down, and I wasn't talking, and it was just looking really bad, and I recognized that, and I was like... I explained all that, and they said, okay, well, we're going to start you on Wellbutrin. And this is the thing that fucked me up, is I had already been on Wellbutrin in high school. And I thought, 20 years has passed, and this is where we're at. This is what we're doing. Almost 20 years had passed. Probably about 20 years. I think it was like, yeah, I think I was in about 34, 35. And I was like, what the fuck? I was deflated. This is the answer. I've already tried this. It didn't work. All these years, and this is the development that you guys have come up with in the medical field. I just was so deflated, and my sense of hopelessness escalated. I felt like, you know, you might as well be prescribing me leeches and a bloodletting twice a day. Like, what the fuck? And I told him I had already been on this, and well, we're gonna give it another try. Of all of the medications that I had taken in high school, I remember being on Wellbutrin probably the longest, in combination with mood stabilizer. So Wellbutrin or Bupropion, the generic form. is an antidepressant, and it's also got a tiny bit of stimulant in there versus some other antidepressants and SSRIs versus like Prozac or Zoloft or things like that. This one, I just wasn't pleased with that answer, and I got the prescription and I went in my car and I just wanted to fucking cry. I think I did. I may have. It was like, we're just going right back to where we were. And I just swallowed it and said, get it fucking filled and prove them wrong. If that's how you feel about this, give it an honest effort. That's the whole reason why you're doing this again, is to give it an honest effort. Because when you're in high school and you're a teenager and you're out of your fucking mind and you're doing a bunch of other shit that you probably shouldn't be doing, and you're not that I'm even that fucking mature right now, but like, you're not going in this with the best intentions or like even really participating. Some of it was like, I didn't want this. I wanted to be better, but it's like, now you're putting me on pills. What the fuck? I digress. I got the prescription filled, began taking it, and I did notice an improvement. And that's the point that I want to make, is for anybody listening to this that's specifically exploring medication or being discouraged with medication, and I'm not saying that it is for everybody, because it isn't. That's not the end-all answer, but those that are exploring it and are ready to give it a try, like I was, I went into that at first thinking that it was not a good idea, or that it was, I wanted to try something different that I hadn't tried before. I felt like I had tried that and it didn't work. But I'm glad that I didn't just throw that out the window. I'm glad that I gave it a second chance, because I'm on it to this day. And honestly, it's, of all the medications I take, it's probably the one that I don't see myself getting off of. I think that I will be on this for a long time. And when I've talked to my therapist and my psychiatrist, they agree. Which was, I mean, it was kind of sad when I heard that I'm going to be on medication for the rest of my life for not being able to get a healthy control of my emotions and a grasp of reality. And I know that diagnosis can be, that can affect how you perceive yourself, that you identify that way. You get a diagnosis that you have bipolar disorder, and you identify as being bipolar, which there's mixed feelings about that. And I'm just using that as an example. Schizophrenia or whatever, dissociative, borderline, all those. You get a diagnosis like that, and then you start to identify as, that's what I am. It's not necessarily who you are, but it's what you are. And that's not necessarily the case. It could be what you have, and it's what you're being treated for. Or, as fate would have it, a lot of people are diagnosed with all of these things, ADHD, bipolar, manic depression, depression, severe depression, all this, because of trauma. And that's a whole nother episode. But a lot of the times, there's not a diagnosis. So they have to put something on it. I hate to say that they're slapping a label on it, but it's a jumping off point. Like, okay, well, how are we going to treat this? Well, let's identify this condition so that we can identify, or there's signifiers in the behavior, and those are the symptoms. Okay, now we can kind of navigate through what therapies are effective and what, looking back at research as to what medications apply and have had the best results. Of course, that's how they fucking do this. I don't know why I'm explaining it like other people don't know this, but when I heard, you know, this is something that you're probably going to be on for the rest of your life, based on everything that we've worked towards, that was a cold dose of reality. Because, like I was saying in part one of this, is that I feel like people only know me as the me that is medicated, and that there's this other version of myself that everyone that I've met up until this point, or since that point, rather, has never experienced. However, it doesn't stop me from going along with the protocol, because I do believe that it's right now the best thing for me and those around me and those that love me and those that I love. That's another point that I wanted to make in the last episode that I hope I did, is you decide what sacrifices and compromises, more than sacrifices, what compromises you got to make. You know, you're not going to find a perfect fucking drug out there that's going to cure you. You're not going to do that. You're not going to find something that's going to stabilize your mood, but you're still going to be able to get the manic highs out of there, or you're going to have the same creative output that you did when you weren't medicated. It doesn't work like that. There are going to be side effects, and effects might as well be the same, one and the same. Okay? It's going to affect you. And you probably won't have a good idea. I didn't have a good idea of like what I was ready to let go of, or what was acceptable or unacceptable for me to deal with for the betterment of my condition, until you're faced with those things. You know, I mean, I was prescribed this one mood stabilizer where I had a very, very short-term memory. I had an extremely hard time grasping anything out of a conversation and holding on to it. It made me feel really cloudy and dumb. And I'm very fortunate that I could recognize it, but also my partner was very supportive in pointing that out and being like, hey, look, I not just getting frustrated and being like, you're never listening to me. It was very clear that there was a distinction there, because I also, you know, I mean, I'm guilty of that. But this was very specific and obvious that, oh shit, this is worse than usual. You're asking me about something that I literally just said, like, you've never heard it before. And that same medication tore my stomach up something awful immediately. And, you know, I wanted to ride it out, be like, give it a week, give it 2 weeks, and see if everything doesn't settle down, because you are modulating what's going on in your brain. Like, it, again, this isn't a perfect thing. This isn't like you just plug it in and all of a sudden, like, okay, you're charged, you're ready to go. Like, there's an adjustment period, and the approach to getting back on medication for me was, okay, be more reasonable, be sensible about this, give it a chance. And obviously, if you're getting into some dangerous territory where you're having suicidal ideation or something, heart issues or numbness, or some, you know, you can't drive safely, then yeah, those are cause for concern. But what could be otherwise considered minor side effects, make those distinctions and don't be so quick to say this isn't working or it's working, but fuck this. It's giving me headaches. It's like, okay, well, are you drinking on it? Does it say not to drink on it? Well, maybe that's causing it. Maybe it's not, but maybe it is. That's a mature way to approach this. I'm not saying that it is or it isn't. What I'm saying, take it into fucking consideration. Don't go into this like you know it. Like you know everything. And as an American, that's a very difficult thing to do. Because if you've been paying attention to anything in the last probably like 50 years, seems like Americans are very adamant about their positions on things. You know? Does anybody else notice that? It's almost like we cast aside logic for dogma. So why would this be any different? Well, maybe it should be different. Hey, maybe our approach to everything should be a little bit different. And, you know, you let somebody finish talking before you make up your mind. Or if you take a medication, maybe give it a little bit of time to work its thing and then settle. And then you can figure out, okay, I like this, this, and this. I didn't like that, that, and that. Okay, get your partner involved and say, have you noticed an improvement? Have you noticed things that are affecting me adversely that I'm not noticing? If you have a trusted coworker, it's not necessarily a bad idea to get them involved. You know, I was very hesitant about telling anybody I worked with that I was on this, that I was getting onto medication, because I didn't want to appear defective or a liability, because if there were side effects and I was going to have an episode of some sort, I don't want to put that in jeopardy. But if that was going to happen, that was going to fucking happen. It would probably be better to confide in someone so that if an episode does occur, whether it's a violent outburst or you have like a seizure, someone can be like, oh, hang on a second. I can attest that maybe this is something that is out of the ordinary. And not everybody has people like that in their life. So I was very fortunate, and I hope anybody that's exploring or feels like they are ready to explore medication as an option to improve their quality of life and their quality of mental health, that they have people that they can trust and people that will help participate in the process, which is, you know, let me know if you see or notice things. Or I was very fortunate that I also had a coworker that I was a prescription for I was on aprazolam, which is a sedative, which is, it's Xanax is what it is. But Xanax has such a bad name attached to it because people take it to get fucked up. And I was taking it to unfuck myself. And my dosage had went from, call it 0.25 up to 3 per day. So that's a dramatic shift in dosage. And luckily I had a coworker that I pulled aside and said, hey, look, you know, I'm going to ask if you could help me with this, and I don't want to put you in a weird position or anything. And I know that and you don't have to, I mean, after you have the conversation, the cat's kind of out of the bag, but it's like, I just want to check in with you and have you check in with me. If you could do that, like maybe once a week or a couple days, we sit down, or we don't even fucking sit down. We just, hey, have you noticed anything? Because this is going to affect my energy level. This is going to affect my focus. It has the potential of affecting my ability to react in a good way and a bad way. You know, am I going to be able to make decisions on the fly, or am I going to be slowed down? You know, what's it going to do to my cognition? And am I going to make unreasonable decisions? Those are the things that I need help noticing. And, you know, I'm not asking you to babysit me. I'm not asking you to be my doctor. Just asking for an accountability partner, you know, just help me navigate this thing until we can get, I want to be the best coworker. I want to be the best boss. I want to be the best partner and person that I can be. I want to be giving you all the best version of me. So just help me do that. And I would imagine people would be down for that, unless they really hate your guts and they'd be like, well, fuck you, I'm not doing it. In which case you're like, yeah, why'd I pick that person? I need better friends. Maybe I shouldn't work here. Maybe I should fire that person. Yeah. Maybe they're poison. Maybe I need to get them out of my life. All considerable variables. All right, we're going to stop right there. This is a topic that we're going to come back to quite regularly. There's so many different ways to look at this, and I want to get a lot of guest perspective on it as well, and get you, the listener, as much information as I can as I continue to do this. That being said, there are websites that I'd like to mention for your benefit. I skim over that sometimes. One of them is NAMI.org. It's NAMI.org. That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which sounds kind of funny because it's not like the alliance for or against mental illness. It sounds like an alliance of mentally ill people, like we're all getting together and fucking this shit up. But they do a lot of great work. They accept donations, and there's a ton of resources on there. They're currently raising money for Mental Awareness Month, Mental Health Awareness Month, Mentally Aware Month. Check that out. There's GoodRx.com, which is what I use. I've mentioned before, I'm uninsured. And there are great discounts on there that will help you afford medication and alternatives to your medication. And it has been a blessing for me. My monthly cost has dropped from a couple $100s down to under $200 with just that alone. So give it a check. It's GoodRx.com, and they've got an app which I use. It's very user-friendly. It's easy to check on medications and alternative medications and generic. You just flash a barcode to the pharmacist, but most times they have it in their system anyway, so they're ahead of the game. And they've got some other discount programs that they can run you through as well. So that being said, don't talk yourself out of it because you don't have insurance and you think that it's going to be too expensive. Look into it first and talk to your doctor, because ultimately they'll know how to navigate through that much better than a podcasting chef. The last thing I'd like to mention is what I use for my therapy, which is openpathcollective.org. And that is, I believe it's Canada as well, but it is nationwide. So no matter where you live or if you move, you can find somebody in your area. If you prefer face-to-face appointments, they do virtual, which works out really well with me and my schedule and my comfort level. And I've been with my therapist for over 2 years now, and we've made tremendous progress. And they have a variety of different disciplines of therapy. So if you are looking for someone to help you get through a tough time, if you're looking for a life coach, if you're looking for
answers or even just a place to start. There's any number of different practices in OpenPath. So give that a try. It is very affordable. They will work with you, and they make sure that you're comfortable with who you're talking with and who you're paired with. And if you're not, there's other options. So that's a great pond to pull from, so to speak. And then always there's the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. And again, you don't have to be in crisis mode to benefit from calling that number or going on their webpage. There's endless resources there. And again, that's another place where you can just get some answers or find direction. I said it before, you should check it out before you need it. It's kind of like buying a fire extinguisher before your house is on fire. If you're somebody who has been in crisis mode before or is not entirely glued together, it's a good idea to take a look at that. There's a lot of things on there that can help you find something that you might not even know you were looking for. And it's very compassionate and community oriented. So give that a check. And that also goes for family members as well. You don't have to be someone who is contemplating suicide to benefit from calling that number or looking into their website. So that all said, I really appreciate you listening. I'll continue to put out episodes. Please look for them. So in the meantime, tell your depression to go fuck itself. And I'll be talking to you really soon. Thank you. Take care.